Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
The name is Pussycat. My rank is criminal, second class. I have no serial number. Now, if you want any further information, you need to check out Resonance Rewind. But first, what did Jessica Burtis make of Resonance Rewind, episode 100? Okay, we went through the 100th edition of Resonance Rewind, but there was one clear absence, and we're putting that right straight away with edition 101 before we indeed actually enter into the world of Batman and the latest Batman episode, enter that darn Catwoman and so on. We need to find out, the world needs to know, what exactly Jessica Burtis, one of our fine Resonance Rewinders, made of a surfeit of H2O, especially given the introduction to tea drinking that was put in place there with respect to, obviously, one of the key characters there, and Mrs. Emma Peel. So, Jessica, we've already had a listen to the rest of the team. They obviously did their piece last week. What are your thoughts on a surfeit of H2O?
So I enjoyed it because I love, weather machine plot. I feel like there was a big fascination a few decades ago with weather machines and kind of the idea of man manipulating nature and using it as a weapon. And so I think that that's always fun to kind of look into. And the cast of the Avengers, I think, I'm not sure what other season I watched of this, but I know this is not my first time watching it because I know we've watched it with Resonance Rewind. So this is a revisit. So it was fun seeing another espionage crew. It's always fun seeing them investigating something new. And I thought this one was actually less international intrigue than I feel like a lot of spy shows have. I understand that the weather machine was kind of, the rain machine was intended to be used as a weapon for other militaries, but it was kind of interesting seeing it with such a small group of characters. It was kind of centralized into one small town. And I thought that
And I was going to say, I think it was Little Storpington, if memory serves, in terms of the actual town's name, with, of course, Professor Sturm, the German scientist who clearly has actually taken on board Granny Gregson's glorious Gregs and produced this particular routine. You're absolutely right. Of course, we looked at Mission Highly Improbable, which is when, of course, John Steed was shrunk, and indeed was Emma Peel was both shrunk in terms of that aspect there. And of course, we also had a look at the episode Too Many Christmas Trees. But this was, again, back from one of those seasons. I think he might have been with us for the new Avengers, of course, which was the Eagle's Nest, which, again, was a variation of the whole thing. So let's talk characters. I mean, this one's full of characters. Which ones particularly appealed? And as you may have heard last week, Kathy Manso put a special bid in for John Steed's bowler hat, which is her favourite character.
That's fantastic. I think Miss Peel ended up being my favorite. She's so demure and so intelligent. But I thought that Eli, the brother of the man who drowned and who also unfortunately met his watery demise, was very funny. He was just kind of, he cracked me up. But I liked Jonah's whole kind of revelations edge he had going on. I thought that there were a lot of interesting characters in this show that I kept wanting to see come back. I think Miss Peel won out.
Yeah, there we are. Emma Peel, clearly played by Diana Rigg, winning once again a vote that was also given by, Jenny Bill in terms of last week's production. But of course, we're moving on now. Let's find out what your score would have been. I don't know if you've actually caught last week's episode as yet, where you got it split the team this in a lot of ways. So what's your score going to be for A Surfeit of H2O, the season 4 episode of The Avengers?
I think I'm giving it an 8 because I feel like the plot, they kind of I think they easily beat the evil doers, but I think just having a rain machine was so fun, and the idea of using a wine press to torture somebody was just such a James Bond moment that I have to give it a good score. I think it was very fun.
Which, interestingly enough, puts you very much in the ballpark of Robin Pierce, who also awarded 8. I went for 8.4. Jenny Bill went for a somewhat sobering two. She didn't like it at all. Exactly. But there we are. It's Jenny's loss, clearly. And Kathy Menso went slap down the middle with five. So there we have it. But as we always say with Residence Rewind, check it out yourself, dear listener, see what actually happens from thence, as we actually head off for the next edition, of course, where we are back in the land of the bat with the Adam West, Burt Ward Batman. And we can see, Jessica, how easily a young student soul can actually be taken for granted and actually corrupted, as Jessica actually produces something which I think we need to ensure we get a full message of, which is a one-year-old birthday cake that she's actually got for Residence Rewind. I mean, this is wondrous stuff there. We feel as though we're sharing in that special relationship across the base. So there we are, Jessica Burtis's one-year. How would you define that as a cake? I mean, is it a cupcake? Is that, what's the...
It's two baby muffins together in a little tower. It's a little tower cake.
Well, there you go. Once again, from sweet tea through to tower cakes, a whole new world. And she's made a wish as well. So all good stuff there. Let's move on to another Residence Rewind. California Nights, taking us around to Kathy Manso's views on that darn Catwoman and Scat Catwoman and so on. Was it one of your first Adam West experiences and William Dozier experiences, Kathy, or have you experienced the whole thing before?
I have. I have seen this Batman version before, the Adam West Batman. It's been a long time, though, to be fair, and I probably haven't seen all the seasons, but I'd like to say I've seen, like, 75% of them. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
January 1967 was when this actually launched on the whole process, and Robin obviously made a big piece of the thing last week about how in many ways the Avengers possibly paved the way for this form of surreal wacky television. Wacky, capital W-A-C-K-Y. Holy wackiness, Batman.
Let's break it down in terms of, would it fly today, or have we gone much more cynical? Are we too cynical to kind of experience the strange and wacky charm there of Leslie Gore's Pussycat singing California Nights?
I think the transitions would have to be smoother, but I don't see why it couldn't be wacky. I mean, I understand that it's trying to mimic the comic book, you know, like with the expressions, although I'm trying to think what's my favorite expression, so I'll get back to you on that. But it's possible, but it would take a lot of time, art, and talent, I think, to really do it. I don't think we're too cynical. I'm sure we like our dark stuff, but like there's a whole genre to that. I mean, we literally have a series called Gotham, if you really want to go into the darkness of it. And and sometimes it's okay to be a little silly.
And it's something where I have to say, much as I know Robin in particular loved the latest incarnation of Batman on screen with Robert Pattinson and so on, there's a part of me which still finds this version of Batman the more entertaining, as opposed to the dark and gloomy and vigilante of the night aspect, which I think has its positive factors to a certain extent, but this tends to work. However, enough of such stuff. As we know, Catwoman mind controls Batman and Robin in terms of this holy domination. Will the boy wonder be able to pause her paws before she performs what have you on you know what? Stanley, Ralph Ross, and Bob Kane, of course, credited as writers. Bob Kane, the creator of Batman, and directed by Oscar Rudolph. Share with us your thoughts. I mean, we're considering both episodes, really, as a whole in this particular thing, because they're both 25 minutes. Clearly, they would have been spread out over two nights. Same bat time, same bat channel. How did you relate to them? Did you feel as though that opening scene where Burt Ward, as Robin, of course, in his guise as Robin, is addressing college graduates about what they should be going on to and so on, did that kind of resonate in terms of, well, that's what happens every time you're graduating high school?
Well, see, that's why the Bat Channel became the Cat Channel right there. So, I mean, it's interesting to see this perspective because you really got to get into the world of, okay, I'm a citizen of Gotham. I live in this world. I mean, and if I lived in the world of Gotham and Robin was about to give an address, that's a kind of pretty impressive person to get to give the address. I mean, what would be more impressive if it was Batman himself? But, I mean, he's busy. He's doing things like stopping crime. It's interesting to see because it's like you said, I think for the last few years, not the last few years, the last few decades, we've been very used to seeing this very dark, cynical kind of version of Batman. And then you go into the Adam West Batman version and you're like, oh, it's bright and filled with colors and things are happening. And it's not always moody.
It's not Christopher Nolan, is it?
No, it's not Christopher Nolan. But it's different and that's okay. We, you know, they... Both things can exist, and it's fine. And I do find it reassuring that Robin was trying to, in fact, be helpful. And then you have the sidekick of Catwoman, which is Pussycat, come into the mix. And before you know it, I wonder, did anyone decide to talk to someone who looks like this? Because she sticks out the most, including a person who's standing next to someone dressed like Robin. I mean, she still stands out more, which is impressive to do. I didn't think it was possible.
Leslie Gore, who I believe is the niece of the producer of the series Batman, Howie Horwitz. And Leslie, of course, much beloved singer of the 1960s, who, of course, gave the world It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To. And wouldn't possibly get engaged with Robin on a first date. With crime and other issues. I loved her line about kind of changing into my day clothes, which was a wonderful way of addressing the continuity glitch that she moved from, I think, a pink costume to a blue costume in terms of that, which was well put together. So what about Julie Newmar as Catwoman? Did you feel as though that was a perfect incarnation, or were there areas which you thought, no, Eartha Kitt would have been a much better person?
No, she was lovely. I mean, it was a good time to watch. I always like to see so many, I mean, I've seen so many variations of Catwoman, and this one's a classic, you know. She really, I mean, she truly is keeping with this villain mastermind kind of idea, and I think she delivers it really well, especially with those gold claws at the end of her fingertips. I mean, I was just admiring them the whole time. Mm. And I mean, she's also beautiful, so that helps.
As someone who obviously originating from Miami, but with good New York roots, did you appreciate the notion of Short Island of course, New Guernsey as opposed to New Jersey?
Yeah, I appreciated it, especially coming from a place called Gotham. but I mean, that's the fun part about going into like the little side things. They always make these references. I actually really appreciate in the comic book world when they do, like in Spider-Man, they always make like Queens references. And I know Queens like the back of my hand. I've been going to Jackson Heights every year since I was born. So whenever you get a little ad lib in there, you're like, ooh, fun. Let's how much further can we take this?
And we know how much Robin Pierce was excited about the sheer wonderment of seeing water towers in New York City. Which is something we don't get in Britain in terms of.
It's quite tall. It's fair. And it's a bit of a unique thing, I guess, because I'm used to them, but it makes sense that not everyone would be.
So apart from the reference to Wacky Races and the character of Pat Pending, who for me it will always be Pat Pending from Wacky Races, as opposed to an eccentric millionaire who keeps all of his money in a mattress. Not a good idea to actually do that. And of course his assistant, who was also connected with the whole process. What about favorite characters? Was it Spade, Marlowe, or Templar, the sidekicks? Was it indeed Madge Blake as Mrs. Harriet Cooper, of course, who emerges in the first sort of area? Or was it indeed Alan Napier as the faithful manservant Alfred? Or are we going to go Neil Hamilton as Commissioner Gordon, or the wonderful Stafford Rep as Shurin Bigara? It's the way forward, Chief O'Hara.
I think I'm going to give it to the narrator. He was my favorite. If we're talking about a side character, you know, if we're not going for the big ones. If I'm going about a big one, it's definitely going to be Catwoman, because she had so many good lines. Although I got questions about this bat pill that she so easily overlooked, and waking up in, oh, all of a sudden I'm in the Batcave. You're better than that, Catwoman. But yes, my favorite side character would definitely be the narrator.
Indeed, is also the producer, William Dozier, of the whole series, and of course was heard on the Green Hornet. Marks out of 10.
Marks out of 10. I was definitely more invested when I was watching the first part of the two episodes. I think, especially with how they always leave you on the cliffhanger, because I was like, no, but I do need to know what will happen. I know it'll end up okay, but will it? Especially now,
he would have been beside himself.
He would have, and it was all of a sudden Bat Channel became Cat Channel. The second episode, it lost me here and there. Also, just the transitions with the three goons, I guess, of Catwoman. Just like, yeah, sit down and listen to her sing. I was like, what's happening? But I think just because I lost a little bit of interest in what was happening in the second half, I'm going to just take it down to a 9. Still a great show.
An anonymous tip just came into the switchboard with the address of the cat lair. Should we follow it up?
Let's go!
All the gray has gone away. Maybe now we'll find a way to grow from day to day. Loving with the love you say is here to stay.
Baby, did you miss me?
Well...
Are you still madly in love with me, huh?
Well...
How about a little smooch? You're my kind of dame.
I hardly even know you, Robin.
Kissing is a great way to get acquainted, sweetheart.
But, Robin, I wouldn't want you to get the wrong impression of me. I'm not the type of girl to kiss a boy on the first crime.
Before we set brain and sinew to this perplexing case, let's review all the facts 20 minutes into Resonance Rewind. Robin Pierce, take it away.
Well, that darn Catwoman and Scat darn Catwoman, they first were shown, they were broadcast a year after the Batman TV series actually debuted on American television. This would be late January 1967. And by this point, the series had basically found its audience. It was a huge cult hit. The only thing that had changed was that it was still a two-part format, but rather than be over two consecutive nights, it was a weekly show now, rather than twice a week. So as this one starts, we have Julie Newmar returning once again as the Catwoman. Now, Robin, Burt Ward, is giving a commencement speech at a high school. We don't know why, essentially, a high school kid is giving a speech at a high school, but hey, there we go.
He's a role model, Robin, a role model.
As all Robins are. And he's being watched quite openly, as a matter of fact, by Catwoman, her sidekick Pussycat, played by Leslie Gore, and the Catwoman's usual three henchmen. Strangely, Pussycat, who is in her late teens, early 20s, comes on to Robin and distracts him while scratching him with some cat phrenic. Now, what on earth is cat phrenic? Here we go. It turns the boy wonder bad. It makes him into a teenage hoodlum. He cruelly pushes Chief O'Hara to the floor. What will become of us? He's now part of Catwoman's gang. Batman is called in to help. But while Batman is talking at police headquarters and trying to find out the background, Robin is actually robbing, see what I did there? Wayne Mansion, and goes into the safe and gets the housekeeping money, all 20 grand of it. Things are getting from bad to worse. What is the Catwoman up to? Is turning Robin bad not bad enough? Well, no, it's not. It's only part of the plan. The Catwoman is planning to launch a series of robberies, which will net her $1 million. $1 million is all she needs to get to the old gangster's home and buy the blueprints of the Gotham City Mint, where she can steal millions more. And as a side plan, she also plans to put Batman himself under the evil spell of Cat Ferenc in this frantic adventure, which actually sees Catwoman get into the Batcave. How will it all turn out? Will Batman actually escape the giant mousetrap, which is going to be dissecting him at any one time? Wow.
It is extraordinary, and certainly having watched it in black and white in its original inception, it gets even more extraordinary in terms of the colour version, C-O-L-O-R. So many classic lines, particularly the Chief O'Hara, Commissioner Gordon scenario. What she needs is a good slap on the wrist. That's enough. You know I'm violently opposed to police brutality. These are the kind of classics which are Shakespearean in their whole essence and the way that the whole thing is actually put together. We've already heard what Kathy Manso makes of this particular episode. We may well hear what Jessica Burtis makes of it next week, if she's now taking the time machine to actually give us her thoughts on the show that's gone past before she actually attends the future. But then again, it is episode 101, but we do have Jenny Bill with us. Jenny, what are your thoughts on this two-part extravaganza of Bat Wonderment from the marvellous direction of Oscar Rudolph?
Where do I start? This is one of my favourite incarnations of Catwoman. I do really like Julie Newmar, and I love Leslie Gore. I mean, I have some of her records, and actually, I didn't ever know that she did any acting, so I was quite surprised when I saw that she was going to be in it. And I like the fact that it gives the opportunity for, we were talking a little bit about this in one of the Star Trek episodes, although this is not to so much an extreme, where it gives the lead characters a chance to play something a little bit different to what they normally do. I know they still get to be quite hammy in this, and it's not really much of a departure from their normal roles, but they do get to be a little bit kind of looser and a bit groovy. And obviously Robin's quite aggressive. And I think that's really fun to see. I mean, yes, I've always loved Batman. And I think this is a two-parter that's really fast moving. It's just full of classic stupid lines, and there's nothing not to love about it.
When you're a 12-time loser, it doesn't make much difference what you steal. Deep philosophy from the cat, the cat, in every sense of the word there. But what about Prince Ibn Karib? Prince Ibn Karib, which actually is a much worse name if you translate it into the original Arabic than the original Inception was actually meant to be, but it still got past the network censors. And certainly Gedalia and the Gedalian embassy, that wonderful tradition of actually weighing the prince and actually matching the charitable scenario there. What did you make of the supporting characters, such as we said, Prince Ibn, or indeed Pat Pending, who, as I said earlier in the production, surely has been moonlighting from Wacky Races?
Who are you asking?
I think we're still with you, Jenny. We're still thinking about you in terms of characters.
I wasn't quite sure. I think that the characters are, they're just all really appropriate to Batman. They all the characters are just sort of slightly larger than life. You know, obviously they are like they come from a comic book. And I think the characters played those roles perfectly in this episode without actually being too over the top and ridiculous. I mean, it's one of the things I really like about this episode is that, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Penguin and or the Riddler or the Joker. I mean, I do love Batman, but sometimes I think that the characters get a little bit ridiculous. But for me, this is all kept just within the bounds of not being too ridiculous. And I think all the characters that were in this just fitted in with that quite nicely.
So more believable than a surfeit of H2O or the Avengers, though?
By a mile, yes.
Sorry. Intriguing. Now, either you're going to be a singer or an arch criminal. How often career officers in schools across the globe have actually said those words? You're either going to be a singer or an arch criminal. And if you're over 20, frankly, Robin, you're over the hill. What did we make of Leslie Gore's performance as the niece of Harry Horwitz?
I actually liked her performance. I mean, I remember, like you, watching this on its first black and white run back in the 60s, which is when I came into Batman. I love that song. The one she
California Nights.
California Nights. It sounds so mamas and papas to me. And I really liked it. Okay, she shouldn't really have planned maybe a career in acting. For an actress, she made a great singer. But then
it's her criminal party, and she'll cry if she wants to.
All the way to the slammer. But this is not actually a series with great acting in mind, is it? I mean, Adam West knew exactly what he was doing when he deadpanned the whole thing. And Burt Ward, not being a trained actor, I think it was Burt Ward's boundless enthusiasm for everything and his stellar overacting and total lack of acting ability, which actually added to the whole thing. I mean, it should have made it unwatchable were it not for the style of comedy and the style overall of the series, because I remember seeing this back when I was, what, 7, 8 years old. As I was meant to, I took the whole thing completely seriously, because Adam West, to me, and possibly to you two as well, became this ultimate role model, because, you know, he did road safety films and all that kind of stuff, and he was an absolute paragon of virtue. And he had his enthusiastic, you know, sidekick with him. I mean, the real acting had to come from somebody like Julie Newmar, who is an established actress in both films and TV. I mean, she did some really classic Twilight Zone episodes. And she, to my mind, is still the epitome of Catwoman to this day. I mean, lots of people say, no, it was Eartha Kitt. No, I disagree.
Anne Hathaway, surely.
Anne Hathaway did nothing but channel Julie Newmar throughout The Dark Knight Rises. That's what she did. I mean, it came across clearly, but you had Julie Newmar, who was 6 foot plus, put her in high heels. She was a trained dancer. She just oozed a feline grace. And with her sort of like sassiness and general, you know, low-level sauciness as well, she was the absolute perfect foil. Because at the end speech, when she, you know, Batman is trying to rehabilitate her, and she turns the whole thing into a marriage proposal, and he says, but what about Robin? Yeah, we can kill him. It's not the first time in the series or the last time that she wanted to murder the boy Wonder to get him out of the way so she could, you know, live happily ever after with Batman. And the whole thing is just absurd. The whole series is absurd, but we all know this. And we all know that, you know, turning your back and crouching down to hide from a police officer in plain sight would never really work. But in the context of this series, and its stylized absurdity works perfectly fine. Just like when Pussycat dressed in her pink little kitten uniform.
Or blue if she's indoors. Pink for outdoors, blue for indoors.
Robin asks her, why are you wearing that ridiculous costume? He's wearing green pixie boots. Come on!
Don't mince words, I can take it. The words of Adam West, of course, as Batman, when he actually responds to Commissioner Gordon's revelation that, of course, Robin has gone bad. And thankfully, Batman does have in his Batcave a suitable device to alert any tracking or tracing of telephone calls to redirect him to Pat Pending and so on, which is very important. But one thing
he must increase Catwoman's word power as well.
She's odious, abhorrent, and insagrevious.
Insagrevious. Apparently not a real word.
No, but it is now, because it has been uttered, it has been used, it has been manifested, it has worked its way through the process.
If it's good enough for Adam West, it's good enough for me.
Those days at the milkshake a go-go. And, of course, the tremendous notion of Robin and that opening speech, which again still echoes with so many graduates across the globe today, possibly only seconded by Baz Luhrmann's graduation number. But the one thing you must remember as you go out into the world to face the challenges of higher education and our great universities is always to obey the law and support your local police. Which, of course, was happening on a regular basis in the 1960s of Adam West and Burt Ward, and probably still does today. But let's move on to that characterization side of things there. So, Jenny, who would be your favorite character within this whole field? I mean, so far, Kathy's very much given thumbs up to Julie Newmar as Catwoman. With, again, a little aside to Pat Pending, I believe. But any thoughts for yourself?
I think Julie Newmar is, I mean, I agree with Robin. I just think she is the ultimate Catwoman. She was born to be Catwoman. I mean, she's just absolutely fabulous at it.
And not Lee Merriweather.
No.
Halle Berry, no. Surely.
No, I've always really, really liked this incarnation of Catwoman the best. Even when I was a child.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, no, no. You can keep on trying, but no, no, no. They don't have what Julie has. And I just think she's just spot on. She knows how to deliver the lines just spot on without, you know, the timing is really great. And she makes it not sound stupid. You know, it's all very hammed up, but she makes it sound sort of believable. Yeah, and she's very good at the sort of making Catwoman look like a fool as well. I do like Batman, but he is the star. and so I think this time I will go for Julie Newmar as Catwoman.
And I've just been prompted, of course, Kathy gave a special mention to the announcer, William Dozier, because she particularly liked his delivery. In all sorts of ways, especially obviously the notion of Batman being beside himself, which again we alluded to in terms of that cliffhanger ending, which opened up a whole range of things there. I'm particularly interested to see the way in which the police stood back and effectively grinned whilst Batman was actually doing all the various fisticuffs. There were a few sort of camera outtakes there, which I think they're having too much fun, these extras. They should have actually been told to be serious on this side of things. Do they not realise that this was a significant part of law enforcement narrative? Robin, who were your favourite characters?
Whenever she's on screen, it's got to be Julie Newmar as Catwoman. I just think that she absolutely nails it. Of all the comic book villains that they brought in, which would be Penguin, Joker, Riddler, etc., Catwoman, as played by her, was always the best. Riddler, for some reason, was always the most menacing, because, you know, you'd have Frank Gorshin really overacting and coming across as truly menacing. But the other two, you know, they were just more nuisances than criminals. But Catwoman, she had something extra going for her. And she's the one person who could take the mantle of, you know, the best person in a particular episode away from Adam West. I also want to mention the gangster Little Al, because I knew that voice. I knew that voice. As soon as I heard it, I thought that's a Hanna-Barbera voice. And it was indeed the actor who voiced Officer Dibble in Top Cat. For the rest of the evening, until I checked it on the Internet Movie Database, I thought it was the voice of Fred Flintstone, Alan Reed, but no, Officer Dibble. There's a little piece of trivia for you.
Oh.
Very important, and one should always keep abreast of foreign tongues, Robin. Hence the reason Robin responds to that by, "There she is, amigo. What now, mon ami?" as well as various other aspects. So keeping, you know, education to the fore, all the way, that huge notion of good citizenship, which of course we'll wrap
good
up
citizenship.
With.
Good citizenship. Very, very important point here, because Batman agrees to become Catwoman's partner, not to save himself from the mousetrap, death trap that he was left in at the end of the first episode, but to save Robin from committing murder and having to pay the penalty for that. Now, that's good citizenship.
It is the ultimate, almost Christian sacrifice that he actually makes in that particular aspect. Intriguing, of course, to see the way in which Catwoman's New Guernsey lair was actually signposted with Catwoman's secret lair right here. Catwoman's lair in here. I mean, a lot of the signs and the additional things that we see around the aspect, certainly, I just wonder at the time, clearly they would have literally passed us by, but with the benefit of obviously not only pause technology, digital technology, etc., there's an awful lot of craft that's going into the
mise-en-scene. This is what I was alluding to earlier when I said I enjoyed it. It was straight-faced, it was drama, it was action. Okay, it wasn't colourful because I was watching in black and white, but Adam West was a role model. And he, you know, people of our age, we all say the same thing. When you come to it, I mean, I rewatched the series when it was re-shown here when I was about, I don't know, about 15 or 16. And I thought, oh, what was I thinking? This is the, oh no.
Where's the vengeful
Batman
who actually has affairs with Talia Al Ghul and Ra's al Ghul and so on?
Well, indeed. But I was coming out of comic books then because I was going through a very dark phase which lasted 10 years, before I came back to them at the age of 26, and the series was shown again. And by that time, my attitude had changed again, and it was like, oh, I see what you're doing there. This is genius.
In terms of the overall piece, we've heard, as Kathy was very impressed with the line. She was a little bit less impressed with the way in which Catwoman was so easily duped by the bat pill and then obviously went unconscious. That seemed to stretch credibility a little bit in terms of obviously the scenario. Plus, of course, we had the classic line from Pussycat, would you like some chicken soup? Which I thought showed a caring attitude, which surely should have meant she should have got time off for good behaviour. Because chicken soup is obviously what every cake crusader who's feeling a bit under the weather would have actually benefited from. And of course, her presumably unrequited crush on Robin, because she obviously has a nice black and white glossy of Robin in full Robin costume, which she's mooning over in her second song that we actually hear in the second episode. And we've heard it obviously on the programme earlier today. Plus that classic line about Robin, I couldn't possibly kiss on the first crime, because you know, these are fundamental issues that are actually important when you see Robin, who's clearly getting into somewhat suggestive mode, whereas Pussycat realizing she needs to just hold back there. So nice to see that the Hays Code was still being echoed in television at these days.
I'm amazed that it was that actually pushed the boundaries of credibility, not the fact that Catwoman was duped into having the sleeping bat gas applied to her twice before entering and before leaving.
He did creep up behind her, he did actually sort of deliver it from behind, so she could have just been sitting in the Batmobile and then knocked unconscious by the bat gas.
But she was thinking, you know, she didn't think, why do I keep taking cat naps? You know, you just don't apply credibility to this, really, do you? I mean, if you do, you've already lost the entire point of the whole series, I think.
And yet, strangely, I can see it being echoed in the Robert Pattinson incarnation as well, in some strange and bizarre way, but nevertheless.
I was amazed by how much of the film music, the score for the Batman movie, which had come out in between the two seasons, was used in this and subsequently as well. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy that CD.
We've identified our favorite characters. We're sticking with Julie Newmar. I'm actually going to put my vote. I'm going to say Leslie Gore as Pussycat. I think she was underrated. I probably didn't appreciate her at the time. She passed obviously in 2015. And I think for her tremendous work within the whole field, I think, yes, she gets my nod in terms of this. How can we pass by there, Robin, and indeed Jenny, without a nod in the direction of the staple quartet of Commissioner Gordon, Chief O'Hara, Alfred, and of course, the very same Aunt Harriet, yes.
Absolutely. Aunt Harriet, who was so distressed when tied up on the couch and Robin blew their safe. You know, whatever can we believe in now?
Exactly. These are the sort of things. It's almost as though within that particular segment, we have the American dream completely destroyed.
Absolutely. It was Gotham City's own Vietnam.
Yeah. So let's go to scores then. Jenny, what are you going to go for as far as the mark out of 10? Is that 2 fives making a 10 out of 10 for yourself? Wow, that's extraordinary. She's gone from the 2 out of 10 from a surfeit of H2O to a 10 out of 10. Which is extraordinary. Even Kathy Manso didn't go 10 because of the aforementioned Batcast susceptibility and the problem with respect to that. She stayed firmly on a 9. We don't know what Jessica's going to go for. She's still working through the whole process. But Robin, what's your score?
Well, this is one of the best episodes of the series that was such a formative thing for me back in the 1960s. In fact, had it not been for this series, I possibly would not be sitting in this chair talking to you right now. So blame Adam West, you know. I'm going to go 10 on it. It's one of the best of the series. I mean, if you're looking for any lower scores, you can perhaps push me in the direction of some of the season 3 episodes. But most of the season one and two episodes for what it was and what it tried to accomplish and did admirably, it rarely set a foot wrong for me.
I think I'll go for 9, primarily because, again, if you're looking at favourite villains, I was more of the Bookworm or Mr. Freeze or even the Londinium Larcenies area.
Oh, see, the Londinium Larcenies for me, I mean, you're talking straight 6. Which Mr. Freeze? They had a different one every season.
Oh, clearly the George Saunders version. I mean, there's only one.
I didn't like Otto Preminger and... Well. I don't know, Eli Wallach wasn't that good either.
But those are for other Resonance Rewinds that will come through the system in the galaxies yet to come. As far as we're concerned today, we simply need to acknowledge the fact that next week we stay with the Caped Crusader, with the return of the Caped Crusader, with the voices of Burt Ward and Adam West and Julie Newmar, and some very credible, passable versions of course, Frank Gorshin, Burgess Meredith, and Cesar Romero. It's the return of the Caped Crusader, the first of 2 animated Batman movies, which kind of suggested that maybe had he lived, Adam West could have still actually been impressing people left, right, and center with his unique Batman 66 delivery. So, apart from saying the wonderful words keep on resonating, and thanks to Kathy Manso, Jenny Bill, and Robin Pierce, the only one I need to actually wrap up with are literally 6 words taken from Robin's graduation speech to the graduating class at Erinsborough High School for a very special moment. Of course, good citizenship is its own reward. Keep on resonating.